This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and coming up in the second half of today's show, Root Cellar Sue talks about seasonal eating. But today we are going to start with Vanessa Voskill. She joins me from our Bismarck studio. She is a dancer, choreographer, director, and Attention All Performing Artists. You have a chance to participate in a show coming up in Bismarck this summer. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
How do you describe this show en masse, North Dakota? Do you even have a sense before you know who applies?
Well, that's a good question because it hasn't been created yet. It's going to be an original work. And the work is going to be something that celebrates the sharing of our stories and the love of North Dakota community. Ultimately, it will have a sense of who's in the piece, since it's an open call of community members, and there will be a sense of people in the work. Basically, it's an open call for 50 participants in the work, and en masse North Dakota will involve anyone who would like to participate in the work.
That must be a little daunting. It's not like you're going to be looking at 50 Dorothys for The Wizard of Oz and you know you have to be able to sing, you know, the mm-hmm. Yellow Brick Road. This is, somebody might just blow you away with something you have never experienced before.
Yeah. That's the challenge of the work. It's basically, I have a sense of what it might look like, but ultimately I won't know until I see who's participating in the work.
Well, what do you mean when you say the show is about the sharing of our stories?
Yes, there will be moments inside the creative process where people will be able to make movement from their, from a joy from their life. And I may ask them to make, it could be very simple movements, it could be very elaborate movements. And from there, they will share those stories with the group. And from there, I will hopefully be able to make a group story that we'll share with the spectator audience.
And by movement, do you mean dance or just any way that a body can move?
Yeah, any way that the body can move. This piece is open for different skill levels. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be a dancer with lots of professional experience. It could be anyone, be the first-time performer, someone who just enjoys the performing arts or just wants to experience something new.
You are taking applications at your website, VanessaVoskill.com, and your last name is spelled V-O-S-K-U-I-L. And again, that's VanessaVoskill.com. How long do people have to apply?
They have until April 21st, I would say. They have a long time to think about and get their schedules together and apply and make some room in their life for this what I think is a very unique project in North Dakota particularly.
Where did this idea come from?
I did a piece called En Masse in Minneapolis about 10 years ago. So this is kind of like a celebratory piece about 10 years later. And it was the first time that I invited the general community to participate in the work. And I ended up with 80 performers in that piece.
Wow.
And since then, I've been inviting people to participate in the work in this manner through pieces such as Shift and Rise and The Student and The Master. And all the participants don't necessarily have performing background, or they do have some performing background. And so this piece kind of comes from this type of tradition in my artistic background.
You are from North Dakota. You've lived in Minneapolis for about 20 years, recently moved back to Bismarck about a year and a half ago. And like you said, you've done a similar performance in Minnesota and you're trying it now in North Dakota. How would you compare the state of the arts in Minnesota and North Dakota?
Well, in Minnesota, there's lots of funding for the arts in Minnesota, particularly for emerging artists. Once you get into established career, you have to try to go national at that point. And so when I was starting out as an artist in Minneapolis, there was lots of funding for me to grow as an artist through the state and through private foundations. In North Dakota, I spent a lot of time researching funding, and there's some funding for nonprofits, but I'm not a nonprofit. I'm an individual artist with a fiscal sponsor. And the difference is that I'm still learning about North Dakota arts. I know there's a lot of community-based artworks, art organizations here. The dance community in Minneapolis is very prolific. It's very diverse also. And so I'm hoping to bring a little bit of something different here to North Dakota through this project.
So what is your funding for this? Are you allowed to say?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm being this piece is in partnership with the State Historical Society, mm-hmm. and also the Dakota West Arts Council is funding this work.
Okay. With a partner like the State Historical Society, does that mean that there's potential for this being, you know, recorded for posterity's sake? Or just they want stories of North Dakota, because that's kind of kind of their thing.
I'm hoping to record the work, and you know, just as at least as a documentation. I don't know outside of that what will be documented at this point.
Okay. We're visiting today with director and choreographer Vanessa Voskill. She is looking for 50 performing artists to be in the show En Masse North Dakota. And this show will be determined based on the applicants. And you can apply online at VanessaVoskill.com. And the last name is spelled V-O-S-K-U-I-L, VanessaVoskill.com. Vanessa, what drew you to dance?
I grew up in North Dakota, and my mother participated in a modern dance company here in town in Bismarck. And I watched her growing up, and I also participated in modern dance here in Bismarck. And the teacher, Jean Thompson Prairie, she specialize in Isadora Duncan technique, which is the pioneer, and she's the modern of modern dance. Mm-hmm. And she taught me this type of dance when I was growing up, and I was always kind of half talking with my movement and half talking. So whenever I would grow up, and so I ended up spending a lot of time dancing growing up. And then I went to Morehead State for a couple of years, dancing and doing theater. And then I went to Minneapolis and I found this modern dance again at the University of Minnesota. And that basically clinched it for me. I was like, oh, I'm going to do dance and performing arts. And I didn't have necessarily all the dance background that ballet dancers have. It wasn't very available to me here in North Dakota. And so I auditioned 3 times before I got into the program, and then I got in. So,
well, that's pretty good. 3 auditions. You know, yeah. You hear stories of people being rejected, you know, dozens of times. So that's wonderful. How do you stay in shape?
It's a good question. I do a lot of yoga.
I bet that's very handy.
And I mean, there aren't any classes here in Bismarck, at least for professional dancers. So I do a lot of yoga, and I do some Pilates, and I go to the gym. And then I actually spend a lot of time in a very small area upstairs in the house and I do dancing there.
Yeah.
And put on my costumes, and I practice. And
do you think in your 20-year career, have you seen, are people more understanding now that dancers are as much athletes as they are artists?
I believe so. I think I get a lot of people referring to Don't You Think You Can Dance, the TV show. Mm-hmm. People, you know, modern dance is not as at the foreground of people's minds. Usually people think of ballet and they think of Nutcracker, or they think of the dance shows that are on TV. This piece is contemporary in nature, and it's going to have influences of Tai Chi, and through walking, there'll be a lot of walking in the piece, from what I can tell, and a lot of meditative moments in the work. So it's hard to talk about what it might feel like or what it might look like, because it's dance and it's open to interpretation.
How do you direct a show like that then?
It takes some training to build a common vocabulary among the performers. It's and I'll pull from my Tai Chi and Qigong experience, and also from my theater arts background, and do some exercises with everyone as a group to build a vocabulary of what it is that we're trying to do together. And then from there, I will ask them to create movements from stories of their lives, and from joyful stories of their lives. And they will share those stories with each other, and then from there we'll create an ensemble piece. And what that looks like is up to the performers. And then from there, I basically think of myself as a leader in the group, not necessarily the person that's going to tell everyone what to do and what to perform and how to move. And works like this, I really look to the performers, to the participants, what it will look like, and how we will move together.
So will they have any input beyond the initial application?
Yes, I'm open to all input about what they would like it to look like. I will lead everyone through a process that where the warm-ups will basically lead them straight into the performance. Whatever we do in the warm-ups, we'll probably see in the performance. And I'm definitely open to any suggestions that might come about in this process.
And participants need to be 15, but beyond that, you don't really have too many certifications here. They don't even need to have a formal arts background.
No, they don't. And that's the true uniqueness of this project, is that anyone can participate in this work as long as they're 15.
How did being a choreographer and then a director change how you danced, or did it?
Oh, I was always the student that would talk while I danced. And this was kind of a unique thing that was coming up out of the 90s in contemporary dance, was talking while dancing. And this was something that I've been working at for a while now, is dance theater and what that looks like. Pina Bausch coined it, dance theater, famous choreographer. And so there's a theatrical element to contemporary dance, and you can talk while you're dancing. So I have a
like
theater.
Are you writing your to-do list, or are you just having a conversation, girls talk kind of stuff? Or what do you mean?
basically text. So I've written my own text for the student. I have characters that will speak while they're on stage, while there's also dancing going on at the same time.
Okay.
And it's the technique is not necessarily ballet, so it's dance theater, or there's lots of different descriptions for dance, as much as there would be for visual arts.
Well, that's kind of next level. I mean, it's very difficult to even just to keep breathing and dancing at the same time, and all of a sudden you're delivering lines.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I noticed in your bio that you refer to yourself as a dance maker.
Mm-hmm.
What does that term mean to you?
It's the same thing as a choreographer. For me, dance maker is a little bit broader. In that oftentimes when I'm making dances, I'm also asking people who are participating in the dance to help me create movement for the work. And so I give them points to work from, and then they will create something from direction that I've given them. And then I might alter that, or I might take that just as it is and then put that into the piece. So it's just a broader term for choreographer.
2017 walk in Japan. Mm-hmm. What is this?
Yes, I got a fellowship from the Japan through the Japan U.S. Friendship Commission, and which was funded by the National Endowment for the Arts, the NEA, and I spent 3 months over there, and I basically was studying a certain type of performance aesthetic, which is basically about sincerity of performance. Through No Theater, which is a national music theater, and basically how sincere you can perform from the inside out.
Mm.
And the time I spent over there was not only just a personal exploration, but it was also professional and spiritual exploration. And I spent a lot of time standing very still and moving very slowly.
You know, I hear you keep talking about movement and making movement, and then at the same time you're talking about meditation and standing still. So
mm-hmm.
this is a very specific kind of mm-hmm. movement that you like.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a background in Tai Chi, so I'm looking at how movement can be expressed from the inside out, from a very sincere place, from an energetic place.
Yeah.
And
with Tai Chi and Qigong, it's very subtle, just the way that you clasp your fingertips together,
yeah.
if they're
mm-hmm.
facing up or facing down and doing the same stretch,
mm-hmm.
can just a subtle difference has a very dynamic impact.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's what also attracts me to working with large groups of people, is that very, very subtle movements are very expressive in a large group.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Well, you have been named the best dancer in Minnesota in 2017 by City Pages. You've twice received a McKnight Fellowship for choreography. You've been listed as one of the 7 artists to watch by Minnesota Monthly Magazine. A great number of other accolades fellowship in Japan that we mentioned. Who are you watching as maybe the next Vanessa Vasco?
I had some very good experiences at the American Dance Festival the past few years, teaching and working there. I got to work with international students from around the world. I have spent time training them, and some of them are actually even interested in coming over here and working with me on this piece.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. So I've looked to the young the younger generations, and I see that they're influenced by people in the older generations, but I find them to be very independent.
Mm-hmm.
And just taking in what is before them and then creating something of their own. And I think that's something that I've been doing on my own also. And I haven't really looked to older generations for influence, except maybe through film. I've been influenced by film in my younger years. But at this point, I'm really just trying to pave my own way in the aesthetics that I've been creating.
And what will you be doing after En Masse, North Dakota?
That's where I'm at right now. I don't have anything planned at the moment, but I would like to do some more work here in North Dakota and do some. I'm already hearing from people that they want me to do another piece where I invite lots of people to participate in it, because some of them can't make this one, and so they want me to do another one.
Well, and this one will be for the performance of En Masse in North Dakota. Participants need to be 15 years and up, but do not need to have a formal arts background, but an interest in performing arts. And you can apply online at VanessaVoskill.com, VOSKUIL. Vanessa, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
More Main Street in a moment.
Hey kids, do you have a story to tell? Enter it in the 2018 PBS Kids Writers Contest. We're looking for amazing original stories from writers in kindergarten through the third grade. So tap into your imagination, break out the crayons and magic markers, and start writing today. When you enter, you'll have the chance to win and see your story published online. First place winners in each grade level will receive prizes and have their stories featured on the Prairie Public website. Everyone who submits a story gets a certificate of achievement. Find the rules and entry forms along with a writer's guide to help you brainstorm and develop plots at prairiepublic.org. Deadline to submit your original story is Friday, March 22nd, the 2019 PBS Kids Writers Contest. Enter today.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. In January, it can be tempting to run straight from the house to an already started car. But for biologist Chuck Lura, there's much to appreciate about winter. In this week's Natural North Dakota essay, Chuck hears ice music.
It's been rather quiet around Lake Metegoshi recently, but I've been able to enjoy ice music occasionally. As some of you know, once a body of water is frozen over and temperatures drop, the big ice-making machine can produce some interesting music. These concerts occur mostly during the evening hours when temperatures drop considerably. They can also occur during the morning hours when the sun comes up and temperatures rise quickly. Ice, like other solids, contracts when it gets colder. As it gets colder and begins to contract, tension can increase within the ice sheet. If the body of water is completely frozen over and frozen to the shoreline, that contractive tension can build to a point where the sheet of ice cracks apart. That releases the tension and sends sound waves reverberating through the air above as well as the water below. Some people just call it sounds of ice cracking, others call it ice music, or perhaps the ice symphony. Whatever the terminology, it's an interesting mix of sounds, all of them interesting. Cracks, booms, bangs, thuds, reverberations. It's been estimated that a 9-degree drop in ice temperature would shorten a mile of ice by 8.5 inches. No wonder lakes are often cracking during the winter months. And of course, those cracks can fill with water, freeze, expand, and increase the pressure all over again. Similar things can happen with a sheet of ice when temperatures rise quickly and ice expands. All that contracting and expanding, melting and freezing, can cause the ice to buckle up, forming what we generally refer to as pressure ridges. As most ice fishermen and snowmobilers know, pressure ridges can pose real danger to traveling across the ice. Small lakes don't pose much of a problem, but larger lakes such as Devil's Lake, Lake Ashtabula, Lake Sakakawea, and Lake Darling are well known for occasionally producing large pressure ridges. Some of the big northern Minnesota lakes such as Red Lakes, Leech Lake, Lake of the Woods, and Rainy Lake can produce monstrous ridges. I can't help but wonder what early cultures thought of these sounds associated with the large lakes during the winter. No doubt some cultures associated them with the spirit world. The best time to try to take in this show is often mornings or evenings when temperatures are rising or falling rapidly. You really owe it to yourself to take in this show at least once this winter. Grab a front row seat, get comfortable, and enjoy the show. I'm Chuck Lura.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center and Dakota College at Bottineau. You can read and hear today's story at prairiepublic.org.
Next time on Prairie Pulse, we'll talk with Allison Veselka with the Barnes County Museum in Valley City about her research project into women in war from North Dakota. And we'll tour the Bollywood Indians in America exhibit at the MCOMP Center in Moorhead. That's next time on Prairie Pulse.
Friday at 7:30 on the television service of Prairie Public.
Still to come on Main Street, a couple of our Thursday regulars are What's Happening calendar of events, and Root Cellar Sue stops by to talk about seasonal eating. But now it's time for the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Supporters of the FM Diversion Project made their case for increased state funding to the State Senate Appropriations Committee. The Diversion Authority is asking for another $300 million based on the new Plan B for the project, bringing the estimated cost to around $2.7 billion. Martin Nicholson is with CH2M Jacobs, the program management consultant hired by the Diversion Authority.
From the standpoint of, is this the right project to protect the infrastructure and protect against a $20 billion loss in that metropolitan area, yes, it is still quite reasonable with respect to long-term and affordable with respect to being able to pay that back long-term with sales tax revenues.
Diversion supporters say they now have asked a federal judge in St. Paul to throw out the lawsuit brought by upstream interests to stop the project, saying the original injunction concerned Plan A and not Plan B. But one of the opponents from Richland County, Cash Olland, says some of the claims made by supporters aren't accurate.
They do not have a permit yet. There was a federal court hearing at Fargo's insistence where they were begging to have the injunction released. It was not released. The Minnesota DNR did not join in releasing that injunction. And in fact, the judge, as I understand, kind of schooled them and told them you don't have a permit and you won't have a permit until the process completes.
The committee has not taken action. Many studies predict that climate change will be damaging to agriculture in the coming decades, but a recent study suggests the effect on crops could be more complicated than scientists think. For Harvest Public Media, Ellie Chen has more.
Researchers in Missouri and Illinois, as well as from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, wanted to know how a combination of increased carbon dioxide levels and hotter temperatures would affect the nutritional content of soybeans. They reported in Plant Journal that increased carbon dioxide raised yields and lowered iron and zinc levels, but the higher temperatures lowered yields and raised iron and zinc levels. Researcher Ivan Baxter says seeing the two environmental factors cancel each other out means further study is warranted.
There's a lot more we have to figure out if we're going to actually be able to predict what the future food is going to look like.
The scientists are studying other crops to see if there's a similar effect on mineral levels. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Eli Chen.
And all of eastern North Dakota is under a wind chill advisory until tomorrow at noon. Patrick Ide is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Bismarck. He says wind chills could approach 35 to 40 below zero, which are very dangerous.
Wind chill advisories are generally issued for wind chill valleys between minus 25 to minus 40. So that corresponds generally to frostbite within 10 to 30 minutes to exposed skin.
It also says the end of this week may not be the end of the recent active wintry weather activity we've been experiencing.
Well, we got looking ahead for the weekend. We have potential for widespread accumulating snow across most of North Dakota. And then looking even further ahead into Tuesday and beyond of next week, it looks like another bitterly cold chunk of Arctic air will be making its way across the northern plains. Another round of dangerous wind chills looks to be on the way for next week.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
Hey, teachers. No need to brave the cold for great professional development. Join Prairie Public's weekly web chats from the cozy, convenient comfort of your home or classroom. This free series features area educators sharing resources, ideas, tips, and tricks to help other teachers maximize their teaching power. Chats are every Tuesday and Thursday, and continuing education credit is available. Go to prairiepublic.org to learn more.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Small talk is more of a space filler rather than a meaningful conversation. Bruce Berg wants us to go deeper in an essay called The Question.
Our skill as a student had much to do with our ability to answer questions. Good students had correct answers. Poor students, not so hot in the question department. A query that continues to test us but does not contain any threats of flunking or ridicule or alienation of a good grade probably comes our way most of the days of our lives. It's simple, cliché, thoughtless most of the time, and yet for many of us we find our answers weak and dishonest and somewhat bored, and a wish to give real answers sometimes. Any place, any time of day, we are exposed to, well, how are you doing? How are you feeling? How are you? It's a throwaway question, and most often receives a throwaway answer in four letters, F-I-N-E. The sincerity of the question is suspect in most cases. As we've learned, the question accompanies just being nice. The questioner will most likely admit to a huge mistake if asking the wrong person, and the response is a list of the pains, the disillusionment, the woe is me that some will use, in the belief that the question was rich in wanting to know. And yet, we know, or should know, that the question and the answer should be given in real curiosity and the answer given in thanks for the interest and relief in the opportunity to spill the beans garnished with the truth. I'm wondering about an honest way to ask and answer the exchange that hangs on to harass one and all for a lifetime. I don't know. Maybe you look sad. I've got two ears and some time. Or I'll give you 5 minutes to expound on your cares. And when you're done, it's my turn. And if we are really not concerned, well, don't ask the question. When nice is too nice, it's nothing, or maybe just fine. This is Bruce Berg, Jamestown.
Bruce is a retired high school English teacher from Jamestown. Coming up next, seasonal eating with Sue Balcom.
This week on the Thomas Jefferson Hour, well, we talk about Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, we slip one face on Mount Rushmore from the third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson, to the 26th, Mr. Theodore Roosevelt of New York.
And as he says, please don't call me Teddy.
Roosevelt was maybe the most strenuous and energetic of all the presidents in American history. He climbed the Matterhorn on his honeymoon, he punched out drunks in bars and so on, but he also wrote 40 books and was maybe the most intellectually ready president in American history.
I'm just amazed by what he did for the conservation movement at the time he did it.
He set aside 230 million acres of the public domain as national forest, national monument, national wildlife refuge, national game preserve, and national park. Nobody in our history has done more for conservation than President Roosevelt.
So join us this week on the Thomas Jefferson Hour for all that and more.
Sunday at 11 Central, 10 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg with Doug Hamilton in studio. And in our Bismarck studio, we have a root cellar, Sue. Sue Balcom joins us once a week to talk about food during Main Street Eats. Sue, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, because food is my favorite topic to talk about.
Well, let's talk about seasonal food, like in January.
Hey, do you guys, like, after Christmas ever have this hankering for something green?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, all I can eat is spinach and sauerkraut.
I know. I'm thinking to myself, this is terrible. I'm going to plant some lettuce and put a grow light over it in my in my porch, because I just can't. No more sugar. No more sugar. So we have to talk about seasonal cravings, and with that, we have some seasonal fruit that you'll find in your stores in January.
All right, lay it on us.
You'll notice the price of apples has gone down considerably in the past 3 weeks, which is a good thing because apples are something that people should totally eat every day. They're good. Eat the peeling. Take the sticker off of them. They're easy to stuff in your purse. I have a little apple punch thing that you bear down on, and it slices it for you, and you throw the core away, and it's a good thing. But you'll also find that there are many, many other things in the grocery store right now, like beetroot, Brussels sprouts, celery, cauliflower. It must be harvest time in some other part of the world. Oranges, lemons. Beetroot is actually what we eat. The part of the beet that we eat is actually called the beetroot. Yes. If you go to Australia or someplace like that, they won't know what you're talking about if you ask for a beet.
Well, when I go to the supermarket here, though, I look for beets.
Yeah. Okay, don't be difficult.
Yeah.
Now.
I'm not going to the other side of the planet to order my beets. Not that I eat a lot of them anyway.
Oh, but they're so good.
They are, and they're so good for you, absolutely. And then I don't know that you can get the tops here very often, but the beet tops are really awesome in the spring when you're thinning your plants out. You should never throw any of that stuff away. It's all good. Anything that you can chew besides the rhubarb leaves in the spring, it's all good. I am so looking forward to spring.
Yeah, right.
But in the meantime, you know, you can still get a lot of citrus fruits in the store right now. This is the season for citrus fruits. And I'm trying to think, if I remember correctly, we can get all these exotic fruits right now. But starting in February, the fruit club that I am aware of that stems from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I'm getting ready to order strawberries, which are coming up here soon. So you'll see, in addition to the citrus fruit, we're going to start moving into spring here very quickly. You can get rhubarb in the store, but, you know, that's so easily to grow around here, I wouldn't bother with it. But kale and spinach, our two favorite smoothie ingredients, mm-hmm. are on the shelves right now, as well as clementines and kiwi fruit and all those kind of other weird things.
Now, I'm seeing a couple of – you've got a list here that you shared with us, and I'm seeing, like, chicory. I've heard of chicory coffee. How else do you use chicory?
Far as I know, that's the only thing that I've ever seen. Chicory is a replacement for coffee. Now, green, I would imagine that you can use that on your salads and for flavorings in soups and things like that.
And then what is satsumas?
Oh, good question. I have no idea. If I had noticed that was on the list, I would have taken it off.
That cutting
Let's
and
all
pasting.
Research that, okay? Yeah, cutting and pasting is no good. I took somebody else's word for this. I didn't walk into the grocery store because, as you know, we don't, you know, depending on where you shop, you're not going to find all of these things. But one of the things that is, like, less expensive right now that I love so much are pomegranates.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been
I love
eating
pomegranates.
Them just a ton.
And there are people that probably have never seen one in the store or probably never had the courage to open one up. But there are lots of really good YouTube videos where you simply cut the top off of them. They kind of have a leathery red skin. But if you cut the top off, you'll see that they're segmented just like other citrus fruits. And so if you cut down along those segments, score the skin along those segments and bust them open, ooh, there you have it. Stick in your mouth little wedges of wonderful, healthy pomegranate seeds.
Another way that's really easy to get the seeds out are the areoles, I think. I don't know for sure what they're called. But you hit the outside – or you roll the outside of it. Like sometimes you do that with an orange if you're having trouble peeling it. You roll the outside of the pomegranate and then cut it in half, and then you can hit it with a spoon too.
Oh, right.
They both work about the same, but one of them you get to hit things.
But I've actually seen those areoles sold separately.
Because
some people just don't like to fuss with the – you know, it can be a little intimidating.
Well, and then there's the do you eat the seed or don't you eat the seed? The pomegranate is basically just seed. Those areoles are seeds. But, you know, I sometimes eat them. I sometimes spit them out. But, oh, man, I'll tell you, there is nothing better than the taste of pomegranate juice. And there is, and I wished I had remembered to go in and get the information on this, but there is a Greek myth about the young lady that was captured and taken into the underworld and was given pomegranates to eat. And when she escaped or was rescued, I can't remember how this story goes exactly, she had 3 pomegranate seeds left in her mouth. And that's why we only have 3 months of summer.
Well, darn it.
That was a little disappointing. But but you shouldn't let that stop you from eating pomegranates. And if you don't want to do the fruit, pomegranate juice is sold in beautiful curvy bottles in your refrigerated section of the produce department at your local grocery store.
All it takes is money.
It is. But look, I mean, if you've ever taken the seeds out, you know why it's so expensive, because how many pomegranates do you think it takes?
It takes 5 minutes to get enough for a salad. Yeah.
Right. How many do you think it takes to get into that jar of or that jar of juice, which you'll notice they do water down sometimes with grape juice and stuff. I would totally recommend the 100% pomegranate juice as a treat. Like, you know, every once in a while you're thinking, I deserve a $5 bottle of something, don't I?
And it's good for
you. It's the price of beer.
There's lots of vitamin C and potassium,
fiber. Yep. It gives almost 50% of your recommended daily vitamin C intake. And, you know, in the wintertime, we have a tendency to not eat as healthy, you know, out here in the Great White North. We aren't outdoors as much as we should be in the wintertime. So I would totally recommend this. It's low-calorie food. So January, if you've got, you know, I'm going to lose some weight ideas in your head, You can do pomegranate juice. It'll fill you up, give you antioxidants, tannins, flavonoids, and 234 calories in an entire pomegranate.
And if you have to spend that much time getting your breakfast ready or whatever, there's less time to eat too much, right?
And you're burning calories probably while you're pounding those things, right? Pounding those pomegranates.
Root Cellar Sue Balcom joins us once a week to talk about food. Sue, thank you as always.
Thank you very much.
What's Happening is next.
And I listen to Andrew describe for them his perfect woman, who doesn't sound much like me. She sounds like a porn star, who's also a genius.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, true stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Such a poignant question, just a regular to be or not to be question there. What is going on? Every Thursday on Main Street, we give you a look at what is happening in our region. And this week, I'm joined with Director of Radio, Bill Thomas. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hi, sure. And so first, I'm going to mention a kind of a pseudo electronic dance music kind of event. It's Laser
Fest. You had me at pseudo.
Well, okay. Just think of it as like EDM for everybody.
Okay.
And it's in Moorhead at the MSUM Planetarium, and they're just doing crazy lasers with music in the planetarium, so you can lay back in the dark, and it's on this beautiful lights on the ceiling. 5 decades of music, so it's not just recent electronica. And colors, art, everything all projected. It's hypnotizing, psychedelic, and mesmerizing.
I definitely want to bring my cat to that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Can you imagine?
Jumping. Friday.
Go to that.
6 p.m.
Yeah. Okay.
They do one show every hour.
Ticket costs?
$8.
Okay. There is an event on Saturday the 26th in Dilworth at the Dilworth VFW. This is a benefit for some twin girls here that were born quite early, 24 weeks, and therefore they ended up in the NICU. There's a lot of issues that can happen when a baby is born that early, and there are 2 babies here to be concerned about. So there's a bake sale, a dinner and silent auction with benefits going to the family. This is on Saturday the 26th in Dilworth, 4:30 to 8 p.m. with a $5 suggested donation, keeping in mind that they will have a lot of major medical appointments.
Yes. There was a composer, Giancarlo Menotti, who was a 20th century composer of opera, and he was really interested in getting opera into new places and getting it to people. So he composed an opera for the radio. He composed an opera for the television, one of the few composed specifically for television, called Amahl and the Night Visitors. And it's frequently done around Christmas time. And it's being done in Valley City Friday night at St. Catherine's Catholic Church. And there's fun in it. The music is beautiful. There's a little bit of mystery and miracles. It's a visit of the three wise men as they're traveling, shown through the eyes and songs and words of little Amahl. It's 7:30, and it's free.
Snowshoeing with a naturalist this Saturday in Battle Lake at Glendalew State Park. Do dress properly for this. Grab your snowshoes, or you can rent from the park. Definitely make sure you have some snow pants and put on some smart wool here. There is going to be a hike through the park. You may even get to see some trumpeter swans. Sometimes there's a chance of glimpsing otters, ducks, geese. This gets going at 10 a.m. on Saturday the 26th, just outside of Battle Lake, Minnesota, at Glendalew State Park. The event itself is free. The state park day fee is $7.
Here is one in Fargo for Saturday. The Boy Scouts Troop 214 celebrating their 60th anniversary. So there's some old Boy Scouts around. and they're doing a golden brown pancake feed at the Copper Ridge Event Center with pancakes. homemade syrup, sausage and eggs, gluten-free pancakes available, and you can get advance tickets by calling 701-237-4540, $8 at the door, $6 in advance, and it's from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday.
There is a STEM spectacular this Saturday in Bismarck at the Gateway to Science. So STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And you can learn those things with some hands-on activities starting from babies and going right on up to grandparents or maybe some old Boy Scouts there. The Gateway to Science is partnering with the Central Dakota Children's Choir. So there's even going to be some music there because a lot of people argue STEM should be STEAM and include right. arts in there too. So 1 to 4 o'clock in Bismarck at the Gateway to Science, and it's free, and this is on Saturday.
Okay, here's one on Friday in Minot at the Clarion Hotel. The Souris Valley Animal Shelter is having the Raise the Wolf comedy show. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, yeah. So there's appetizers, cash bar. It costs $35 to come in, and they got like VIP admission and stuff if you want it. It's a fundraiser for the animal shelter. It is a comedy troupe that travels the country. They are called Raise the Wolf, and you can guess like what some of the jokes are, you know, about like the talking dog, like what's like what's on top of the house? Woof. Anyway, That'll be happening Friday night in Minot at the Clarion Hotel.
All right. My pick of the week is Frostival. This is a couple days long over the weekend throughout Fargo-Moorhead, including an icicle park at Island Park. And so, you know, snow, ice, they're difficult to deal with when you're driving, but they can also be very, very beautiful if you have the ability to celebrate this with a Frostival and just go do some fun, build snow castles. My husband is working on, he's been snow castling. I don't know what he's been doing, but go and check out some snow castles.
Well, and you're sliding on this stuff too,
and you
right?
can be, yeah, there are races.
On
yeah, you can take a photo under some palm trees, you know, if you need to play a good imagination game. 10 to 3 is when the park is open, but the festival goes throughout the weekend. What's your pick?
Well, I'm a winter cyclist, and I see more and more people riding bicycles in the wintertime to get around. So I'm interested. There's been a kind of growth in these wintertime bike races, and here's one at Fort Stevenson State Park out by Garrison, Fat Tire Bike Race Classic. And it's a series of laps. They begin and end at the visitor center. It's 14 miles total if you do it. Registration from 10 to noon. And there is a social afterwards, which might be the real reason to go, with live entertainment and chili prizes awarded for top male and female finishers. And you will get a Sub-Zero neck gaiter, you know, like a thing to put around your neck to keep from getting frostbite. Starts at 1 p.m., $30 in advance. And that is this Saturday at Fort Stevenson State Park.
That's what's happening.
Don't anybody want to see justice? Black, white, or other? I mean, it would be anybody.
Wasn't no daddy who was trying to get rid of all the black folks. That's exactly what he's trying to do.
So are you confident that Curtis Flowers is guilty?
That I will answer definitely. No question at all.
Prosecutors in this country have tremendous power. They can charge you with a crime. They can take you to trial. They can even try to convince a jury to have you executed. This is a story about how one prosecutor used his power in a small town in Mississippi. The Trials of Curtis Flowers, a documentary based on the podcast In the Dark from American Public Media.
In the Dark, The Trials of Curtis Flowers, coming up Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain on Prairie Public Presents.
This is Dakota Daybook for January 24th. An important aspect of Native American oral tradition involves sacred bundles of relics that help storytellers remember tribal stories and histories. According to newspaper reports from the 1930s, certain members of the Hidatsa Waterbuster clan were responsible for praying for rain and also for safeguarding a sacred medicine bundle that contained two ancient human skulls wrapped in a buffalo robe. The skulls represented two huge eagles that had turned into human beings. They were thunderbirds, sky spirits that could send rain. At some point, the keeper of the bundle unexpectedly died, and a relative sold the bundle to a Presbyterian missionary for $30. It was subsequently purchased by a New York museum in 1927. When the drought and dust of the Great Depression hit the prairies, the Waterbuster clan believed it was because the medicine bundle hadn't been properly kept. So in 1933, they began the very difficult task of raising $400 to send a delegation to New York to get the bundle back. Unfortunately, the museum was not willing to part with it. The Waterbuster's spokesman was Arthur Mandan. He wasn't a member of the clan, but he was on the Tribal Business Council and was known for his powers of persuasion. His children say that Mandan went so far as to get the issue before Congress, but it was when the newspapers picked up the story that the museum finally consented to trade the bundle for an equal artifact. The clan offered a roughed-up stone hammer and a sun-bleached bison horn stuffed with sage, and it was this week in 1938 that the exchange took place. In New York, Arthur Mandan, 75-year-old Drags Wolf, and 84-year-old Foolish Bear were given the red carpet treatment, including a dinner at the home of Joseph Kennedy and a meeting with President Franklin Roosevelt. When a museum staff member began to open the bundle for press photographers, Foolish Bear and Drags Wolf rushed forward to shield the contents. When the bundle was safely back in North Dakota, the Hidatsa celebrated through the night. They say the clouds burned red for a day and a night, and in the spring, the rains came back and turned the prairies green. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Mary Helm and Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
I just never thought that the federal government could kind of be the cause of my downfall.
A partial shutdown is about to enter its sixth week, and federal programs that help house and feed millions of Americans are running out of funds. What do people plan to do?
They're going to be faced with some very unwelcome choices.
Decisions on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Interrupting all programs.
Hi, this is Bill Thomas of Prairie Public. If you're listening to us over the air in the Minot area, you have noticed the outages as tower crews work to build our new towers and rehang our antennas. High winds and cold temperatures slow them down. I think they hope their next job will be south of here. We appreciate your patience. We're still there on your desktop or mobile app or in a smart speaker, and we will finish up and be back to a normal on-air service as soon as possible.
That's it for this edition of Main Street. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.